Hi, everybody. This is Bill Neville with the Entrust Group. And thank you for joining. We're going to get started on the webinar. I'm pleased to have as our guest presenter today, Neil Bawa, who has been guest presenting for us a number of times. And this is a kind of an annual one that he does for us called Real Estate Trends, where he gives a very data-driven information about what's happening in the real estate market. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy this, and let's go ahead and get started. Neil, you want to get us moving to the first page? So
yep, here we go.
Before we get started, this is something we always put up as a disclosure that the Entrust Group does not give advice or endorse or recommend any particular investment. We are a custodian and record keeper of self-directed retirement accounts. In short, you can invest in non-traditional assets inside your retirement account. We will be the custodian and record keeper for that, but we do not provide advice. We don't sell you investments. We don't recommend any particular asset. We encourage everybody who has an account with us to talk to any advisors, CPAs, anybody like that. As far as what we're going to do, first, this is the introduction, and we're going to talk a little bit about self-directed IRAs. Then Neil's going to go through his presentation, the new normal, unreal estate 2.0, what's coming ahead in 2023, and how real estate he predicts is going to do in this environment. Then he's going to go to the best cities to invest in and, Neil's picks for 2023. And then at the end, we'll get to a Q&A. We read the Q&As and then answer them. And the ones that are for me, I'll answer. The ones that are for Neil, he'll answer. So feel free to type in your questions at any time that you want. We'll get to them at the end. You can have the question chat box. You can enter them there. And like I said, we'll answer them at the end. That's me. We need to update this slide. I've actually been with Entrust for over 12 years. I'm your, business development manager. Go ahead, Neil. We currently have over $4 billion in assets that we custody. We've had, at this point, over 45,000 investors that have had accounts with us and invested in non-traditional assets. We've been in business since 1981, so 42 years. And one of our business models that we use to differentiate ourselves from our major competitors, that we provide a single point of contact for anybody who opens an account. So for anybody that's in my region or is referred to me by one of my referral partners, then they get me. And then my associate, we operate as a team. And then I have three colleagues that if you are in their region or referred by one of their referral partners, you'll get them as a single point of contact. So no calling an 800 number and getting whoever happens to pick up the phone. You get a specific assigned point of contact. And as I mentioned, Entrust, we are self-directed IRA custodians and record keepers. The majority of our staff is certified IRA service professionals. We have offices throughout the United States. We're headquartered in Oakland. We do many in-person events. We sponsor a lot of different real estate and notes and different investment events, and we hold these monthly webinars. We have a continuing education program for people who in certain states provide continuing education for realtors, for financial advisors. So if you're interested in something like that, reach out to me and we can talk about that. And then we have our biannual IRA Academy that's taught by J.P. Ruiz. And that helps prepare people within our industry for them to become certified IRA service professionals. We're the only company in this space who has the authority and the credentials to be able to do that. And real quickly, what is a self-directed IRA? It's what defines a self-directed IRA is two things. One, you make all your own investment decisions and you do all your own due diligence. Entrust does not advise you or help you make investment decisions. And two, you can invest in non-traditional investments. You're not limited to just stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So most people with a retirement account, their custodian is a bank or brokerage firm. Those banks and brokerage firms are what limit you to stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, but the rules don't limit you. You're actually allowed to invest in pretty much anything you want. You can invest in real estate, precious metals, private equity, private debt, all kinds of things, but you have to have your account with a self-directed custodian. And we are regulated and required to follow all the same rules that Fidelity, Merrill Lynch, Charles Schwab, any of those companies that custody retirement accounts. Again, the only difference between them and us is the service we provide from the standpoint that they provide advisory services and we don't. And the other part is that we'll hold non-traditional investments, whereas they just limit you to stock bonds, mutual funds. So that's my quick spiel. Now we're going to get to the exciting part. Neil, I'm just going to mention real quick. Neil and I have known each other for a pretty long time. And I went to, he used to have a meetup group here in the Bay Area where he started doing these presentations. And this was probably at this point when I first saw it, was 6-7 years ago, I want to say. And now Neil is, I go to like major real estate events and Neil's like a keynote speaker. So I'm one of these people that can say I knew Neil when, because I've seen like the growth that he's achieved, from, you know, what was a pretty small local thing to where it's become kind of a national, he's become kind of a national figure in the real estate investment space. So I'm happy to say that I've known Neil for a long time and I've seen this. So the first time I saw him do this, I went up to him immediately afterwards and said, we got to have you on our webinar. And he's been doing it ever since. So, Neil, thanks again for doing this. And I'm going to put myself on mute. I'll be back when we get to the questions at the end. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoy.
Thank you. Bill, it's always a pleasure to do this at Entrust. And you have an amazing audience. I must confess, though, that this presentation, it was designed in January, and I basically had to rewrite a good portion of it because I'm suffering from whiplash, you know, and anyone in real estate is, because 2022 was the single most profitable year in all of real estate history. It was best for single family, best for multifamily. It was best for transaction volume for both. And from those heights, we come, that was 2021, by the way. We come into 2022, everything changed in an instant. And now in 2023, we live in a new normal that's so bizarre that we've coined it as unreal estate 2.0. There's a lot happening. All of it somehow affects real estate. And in this presentation, I'm going to tie it all together, make it easy for you to understand the impact on single family and multifamily real estate. And once you understand the impact, we're going to go look at the future. So the economic forecast for 2023, well, let's just call it the second half of 2023. We'll cover it all: GDP, recession, interest rates, unemployment, inflation. And then we're going to show you how real estate is likely to perform in this environment and where are the windows of opportunity. And I'm going to finish with the shootout. This is for the 8th year in a row, and I think Bill's watched 7 of them. We will share the analyst's pick for best cities and states in the U.S. and then for real estate investing. And then I'm going to stick out my neck and give you our top pick for best cities in the U.S. to invest in. For those of you that don't know me, I'm a quirky and opinionated data scientist and technologist. I buy and build large multifamily projects. Portfolio is 31 properties. We have 900 data-driven and nerdy investors that have trusted us with our money. And this is about half of our portfolio. As you can see, some are old, some are new. We like them both. Here's the boring legal stuff to get out of the way before we dive into the good stuff. Friendly reminder, this is an educational webinar. I'm sharing my personal opinions. You're not guaranteed to make a fortune in real estate just by listening to this. So do your own research, consult professionals, and remember that investing in just about anything, including real estate, is risky stuff. And don't be shy to type in your questions. We'll do our best to answer them at the end. All right, moving. All right. So as you can see from the clouds on the screen, on the screen, stranger things are happening, and they're not just happening on Netflix, you know, my favorite show. Every slide from here on gets more and more bizarre, just like season 4 of that particular show. And we start Unreal Estate 2.0 with the curse of the strong U.S. economy. And when I say this, people are like, wait a minute, Neil, don't you mean the blessing of the strong U.S. economy? We've got a labor shortage of 4 million people, second strongest job growth on record, record low unemployment of 3.4% as of yesterday. So we should all be feeling blessed, right? Well, wrong, because we're in the upside down, to use a Stranger Things term. Everything that was right in the world in 2021 becomes wrong, becomes the curse if inflation is high. In 2022, U.S. stocks lost 20%. And the tech index NASDAQ lost a stunning 33%, even though corporate profits are up 25%. And U.S. homeowners are $30 billion richer than they were pre-COVID. Why? Because the era of super cheap money ended, and it cannot come back if the economy stays strong. Feeling unreal yet? And in this upside-down world, we have to come to grips with two huge 800-pound gorillas. First one, geopolitics. Chart on the left, BlackRock, largest asset manager in the world. Geopolitical risk was less than zero in 2018. But as we end this 2022, it's the highest it's been in decades. And the world is fracturing into competing blocks who hate each other but have to trade with each other. And we see all kinds of problems into that. So we'll dive deep into that. But before we do that, let's introduce gorilla, 800-pound gorilla number two, labor force participation rate. BlackRock also points out that in 2008, 66% of adults in the U.S. wanted jobs. We're down to 63% before COVID. Now we're down to 62%. Thank you, COVID. According to ChatGPT, who clearly knows everything, a 1% decline in the labor force is 1.6 million people. So now we've lost 6.5 million working adults since 2008. And somehow we all thought that removing 6 million people in the workforce wouldn't create wage inflation. That's ridiculous. So let's dive deeper into that first gorilla, geopolitics. 2022 had the second highest oil and gas shock since the 1970s. Putin's war took the inflation that was created by COVID supply chain issues, and then it turbocharged it. Massive food inflation, massive energy inflation is everywhere in the world. And without getting into a red versus blue debate, inflation is not a U.S. problem. Helicopter money didn't create our inflation. Supply chains and Putin's war did. Dozens of countries that didn't print any money during COVID are facing it just like us. In fact, half the world has double-digit inflation. Take a look at this chart on the right. Americans are whining about half a year of 9% inflation. Anyone want to live in Zimbabwe, Lebanon, or Venezuela? Not me. I'm going to take the U.S., political dysfunction and all. A lot of that inflation, by the way, is coming from an energy crisis. The world is in the midst of the first truly global energy crisis, with impacts that will be felt for years to come. Chart on the left shows how we're hurting the least of any country. Dark purple is bad. Europe is in trouble. On the right, you can see that Europe's natural gas costs are up 6x in a year. Electricity up 78%. Total energy prices up 2x in a single year. And our Federal Reserve knows, really knows, that if inflation expectations become anchored, and they're at serious risk of doing so, we could be in for a decade of higher inflation because inflation is affecting every part of the economy. I've even stopped eating salad because now I have lettuce prices to blame. Which is why it's so good to see the Fed have this amazing sense of urgency after having no sense of urgency at all. The yellow line is the change in the Fed funds rate in 2022. And as you can imagine, it continued in 2023. And as you can see, the Fed is hiking faster than at any other time in recent history. And it's a race for the Fed, and it's a race that they have to win. But all such Fed races have consequences. They have collateral damage. In 2022, total U.S. household wealth dropped by a stunning $13 trillion. That's a lot of Benjamins. Keep in mind, though, that this still leaves household wealth adjusted for inflation 10% higher than 2019. Home equity, still massive, at 71% of the market value of homes. We're surviving and somehow thriving in unreal estate 2.0. And do keep in mind that even with my, you know, gloomy thoughts about potentially oil prices going back up this year, overall the inflation picture is getting better. It's getting better. And I love that movie poster on the right, by the way. Incredible. They even put the name of all the Fed governors starring in The Return of Inflation. Pretty cool, eh? Anyway, it's clear that U.S. inflation has now crested. Just look at the graph, right? Thank God. The big question is, will it get back to 2% and when? Because it's clear that the Fed doesn't give a damn about the stock market or real estate. They just care about getting inflation down to 2%. And everyone's warning us it takes a long time to do that. So we're likely to be living with higher inflation longer than we're thinking. But think about what I'm about to say. Inflation is not just a wealth destroyer. It's also a wealth creator. As the cost of stuff goes up, the value of the dollar goes down. So inflation transfers wealth from savers to borrowers, from savers to borrowers. And when inflation is high, that transfer, it's also faster. If inflation, for example, remains at 8%, worst case scenario, you can see in right here that stuff is going to cost 216% more in just 8 years. stuff will double in less than 8 years. Shouldn't you buy that stuff now? All right. Time for section two. It's time for me to share some economic forecasts for the rest of 2023. Remember, not real estate, but most of the real estate forecasting later in the presentation is actually based on these economic forecasts. Here's a sobering chart. What this complicated chart is saying is that the green dotted line is the point at which GDP or gross domestic product does not cause high inflation. In other words, most economists believe that we need to get from the red line, which is our current GDP trend, to the green line. Well, that's a 2% fall. That's a lot. That's a lot. And we do see encouraging signs that inflation is going down, but there is no past precedent of inflation falling sharply without a sharp decline in GDP. In other words, if you're thinking that somehow inflation is going to keep declining without a sharp reduction in GDP, what you're saying are those four famous last words. This time it's different. We don't believe this time's different. You can get inflation from 9% to 5% with interest rate cuts, but to get it from 5% to 2%, we believe that economic activity or GDP has to fall a lot. Bottom line, a recession is a certainty in our view. And the Fed, by the way, knows that they have to go to infinity and beyond, just like Buzz Lightyear. So they've been raising. Actually, at this point, we have to update this a little bit. This slide is not updated. They're at 5.25% for the Fed funds rate. Now, at this point, it's very, very clear that they've stopped. So either this is the peak, or it's going to be maybe one more interest rate hike and then a peak, right? So this is what JP Morgan is saying is likely to happen, right? So in the first half of 2023, we expect the S&P 500 to retest the lows of 2022 as the Fed over tightens into weaker fundamentals. And then we end up with disinflation. We end up with rising unemployment, which we haven't seen yet, by the way, and declining corporate sentiment, which we have seen. And that pushes us into some sort of a recession, right? Well, let's address unemployment, right? So this is the Conference Board's economic forecast, and it shows a strong start to the year. So we're kind of here. Right now we're in Q2, so their predictions so far have been pretty much on. But then they're predicting that unemployment starts to spike up and ends up by 4.5% at the end of the year. So this area right here is where they think there's going to be a recession. So is there going to be a recession? Yes. We believe that there's going to be a very short, very shallow recession in Q3, basically starting in July, so a month and a half from now, and going until the end of 2024. We've looked at a bunch of forecasts, by the way, 20 or 30 of them. They pretty much all support a recession in the next 6 months. All right. I'm done with all the dense economic analysis stuff. Now for the more interesting stuff, real estate, right? We'll do a quick 2022 flashback, then we'll get into the business of forecasting single family and multifamily for the next 12 months. So home prices are falling. Did you know that? They've fallen by more than 5% from June of last year, which was the peak. June was the peak of home prices in the United States, to March. I don't have any April data yet. It'll come in a few weeks, right? And that's 5%. Now, seems like a small one, but keep in mind, this is the largest June to December drop. It dropped basically to December, January, February, March has sort of been flat. And so this is really the biggest, you know, drop since 2008. One state, just one state, seems to be ignoring the rest of the United States. Florida, look at that. Miami, 20% up. Northport, Sarasota, 18. Lakeland, 17. It's all those New Yorkers and Connecticut people that are running towards Florida, and New Jersey people. And, you know, Florida has somewhat affordable homes and it has no income tax, so that's still going up. But other than that, the U.S. is losing steam. So every year I show two or three home price forecasts, but this year I didn't want to be accused of cherry picking. So here on the screen are 21 different forecasts. And as you can see, it's a range from 5% price growth all the way to 22% price drop, right? Now, four of the sources are green. They're predicting price hikes. 17 are predicting declines. In other words, no one has a freaking clue, but I'm pretty sure that prices are not going up 5%, realtor.com. So these people are really drinking the Kool-Aid and it's rotting their brain. Now, it's very important to say this. Home prices not falling everywhere. In fact, as you can see, they're actually not falling in the majority of the country, right? Look at the map. I mean, this is really, there's very, very little here, right? So there's only one spike here, for example, that is, you know, significantly larger than 10%. Actually, there's a few more. So San Francisco, 13, San Jose, 12.7, Seattle, 11, Phoenix and 10. Those are the four that are above 10%. But you notice most of the drops are fairly small. And almost all of the drops so far are basically along the West Coast. So, you know, you see Seattle, you see Washington State, Oregon State, California. We also see Arizona. We see a little bit in Nevada. And then we see a little bit, very little bit, pretty much in just Austin. And the rest of the United States, not much. Here's the actual reality of real estate. This is what you have to absorb. Home prices absolutely exploded post-COVID. Massive increases every state of the country. Just to give you an idea of how massive the increases were, we just saw a second ago that Austin has dropped 9.7% since June. But the orange bar shows up how much it has gone up in 2 years. A staggering 75% in a country that has 1% population growth. Right. So even after retrenching, Austin's somewhere around 57% higher than it was pre-COVID. Right. So bottom line is that even if prices decline another 10% from here, they would still be massively higher than pre-COVID. So by now, you're probably wondering, OK, Neil, fine, you know, some sort of housing recession, but not really housing distress. I get it. Where's my opportunity? Am I just buying a dip? No, there are other opportunities. Right. And those opportunities are pointed out by tweets like this. Ali Wolf, chief economist at Zonda Research, tweeted, "Our data is now capturing a 70% cancellation rate in Phoenix." She's talking about single-family new construction homes, by the way. 7 out of 10 buyers are walking away from their deposits to buy a new construction home in Phoenix. And that tweet sort of brings us to the opportunity for you guys, the real estate investors. Every investor knows we have a shortage of housing, somewhere between 3 and 5 million units. And if we don't want that shortage to get even worse, we have to keep building homes at a certain rate. Otherwise, we'll make it worse. Except when interest rates are high, buyers stop buying new single-family homes. The nation's biggest builders are sharing that home buyers are canceling 30, 40, 50% of the deposits that they put down. And you can see that impact on the blue line here, right? That's the reduction in home building in the United States. And that's your opportunity. If we need to build hundreds of thousands of homes every year, and we build hundreds of thousands of homes less for each of the next 2 years, we will increase the shortage in the U.S. by a minimum of 500,000 homes. Where will those families go? Well, they're going to rent. And rent is all investors care about today because rent equals cash flow. Which brings us to the most important slide of the presentation, the one that you should screenshot if you want to, or grab your phone and take a picture of. This is by far the most important. As a landlord, as a rental investor, we all intuitively understand that if the home monthly payment for a home is lower or equal to the rent, people will buy. If the monthly payment is higher or much higher than the rent, people will rent. Well, so every real estate investor should be obsessed about knowing where is the rental payment versus the mortgage payment dynamic just to figure out if you should buy real estate. Today, my friends, that dynamic is massively in favor of landlords. Look at this circle in the right. The gap between rents in green and home price mortgages in this darker color is the highest in history. It's even higher than 2005 or 2006, right? This is ridiculous. And it's not like rents are not going up. Look at this spike. Rents are going up. But here's what's happening to mortgages because of interest rates, because of home price increases. And yes, you know, there's a little bit of a dip here, and there might even be a little dip here. But I think the dip's going to probably end up here where my cursor is. The gap would still be the highest in history. This is the worst time, by the way, in history to buy a home. All right. Here's something else that's important. Savvy investors also know this critical chart that history clearly shows that when inflation spikes, rent spikes, right? You see this dark blue line, right? You can see the inflation spike from 1974 to 1984 led to this decade of massive rent increases between 6 and 12% rent increases in a year. By the way, that's 3 to 6 times the historical average of 2% rent growth in a year. Inflation dropped, rents dropped back, and haven't risen since until 2021, until post-COVID. So savvy investors all know. Firstly, inflation is not going to die quickly. It's going to linger. And you also know that we will have above trend rent growth in front of us because rents stay above inflation. So it's really good for you to know where the big investors who understand all of this stuff are buying. Well, every institutional investor looks at an annual U-Haul report, which shows where people are moving to. And the list is on the right. Texas and Florida, champions for a decade. South and North Carolina, racing up the charts. And Tennessee and Arizona, holding their positions. But Georgia, particularly Atlanta, racing up the chart. The big surprise, 9% Ohio. It's a low-growth, Rust Belt state, now benefiting from the return of manufacturing to the U.S. I never thought I would say this, but go Ohio. And so I'm going to end my real estate section with two thoughts. First, remember this, we need 4.3 million more apartments by 2035. And I do expect price declines in apartments because of low interest rates this year. Nothing changes that. But once the economy corrects, once inflation drops, we still have a huge shortage. Don't forget that. And here's my second most important slide of this presentation. Home buyers just had the worst 12 months in their history. The table's stunning. It shows the income change needed to buy a starter home, like an old 50-year-old two-bedroom home, right? Just over the last 2 years, in Tampa, Florida, you needed to make 123% more to own a starter home today compared to 2020. Look at that number. Your salary probably went up 10%. In Austin, you need 116% more compared to 2020. You probably didn't even get to 16%. And in case you're thinking I'm cherry-picking cities, look at the bottom line. This is the United States, and you need an 88% increase in income in 2 years to own a home. This is devastating. It's mind-numbing because an entire generation of Americans, over 30 million families, will never buy a home. Never. And while I see this as the greatest tragedy of this generation, it's also obvious to me that this is also the greatest opportunity of this generation for you, for landlords. And I've been waiting for years to talk about this slide. The question is, what is Neil doing to solve this crisis, right? I'm a cog in a very big machine. So I thought single-family homes are very expensive. They are the problem, right? People can't afford them because otherwise everybody would live in a single-family home. Well, apartments people don't want to live in. And apartments these days are also very expensive. So what I did was I said, maybe townhomes are the solution. They're halfway in between. So I built lots of townhomes. I built them throughout America. This is just a sampling of them. And As I went, I started basically losing my mind and started building expensive townhomes like the ones on the left and really expensive quadplex townhomes like the ones on the right. And then I realized that wasn't my mission. I was trying to solve America's problem. So I started building simpler townhomes and people loved them. And so my mission is simple. I want to build 10,000 rental townhomes in the next 10 years for middle America. And I say that by quantifying rents from $1,500 to $2,000, $1,500 on the lower side, $2,000 on the higher side. And I'm serving families that make $54,000 to $72,000. And in the process of doing that, I wanted to create substantial profits for my 900 investors. This was hard. I had to do data science. And of 400 markets in the U.S., I was only able to find 9 out of 400, less than 1%, where I could make this work. But I've already done it in those markets. I've created the profits. Now I need your help. I need to scale it to 1,000 townhomes a year. And we're looking for like-minded individuals, like-minded investors, also people who are partners that basically have access to money, who really understand this mission and want to know how we'll solve the middle America problem. So if you're interested, please, in the chat, type in Mission 10,000, and we will share our detailed story with you. We'll tell you exactly how it works. So Mission 10,000, hopefully you join us. It's a noble enterprise. Now, I'm going to end my presentation with a shootout. So best cities for 2023. Here is Realtor.com's list of the top 10 housing markets that are positioned for growth in 2023. And immediately, I have a WTF moment. Hopefully you know what that means, WTF moment. Because all of the 10 cities in our top 10 housing charts, all 10 of them, would have a near zero chance of making it to a top 10 list in a normal year. That's how bizarre things are right now. You know, we talk about investing in, you know, people like to talk about investing in fast-growing cities, great population growth, job growth, long-term fundamentals. All of those cities are missing from this list. In fact, only one out of these 10 cities, only one actually has population growth faster than 1% in the last decade. All of the rest had meh population, meh job growth, close to or even lower than the U.S. average. In fact, two of these cities, Hartford at number one, Toledo, Ohio at number 10, committed the cardinal sin of real estate investing. They lost population. Toledo lost a stunning 17,000 people in the last decade. So what the heck is going on here? Here's a clue. There is only one word that matters in 2023. Affordability. Affordability. Because all those super sexy markets that I have spent years talking about, and Bill Level's been, you know, seeing me do this from 2017, all of them, Vegas, Phoenix, Austin, Dallas, Denver, San Francisco, Salt Lake, all the usual stars are here. But this is a list of the fastest cooling markets in America. So all the hottest markets in the last 6 years are now turning into buyer's markets. I mean, I haven't seen Dallas or Phoenix in a buyer's market list for 8 years. So we're truly in the upside down because there's only one word that matters, affordability. So if you're looking to buy today, you might want to look at the list on the slide before, because right there, things are affordable and rents are going up. Everywhere else, rents are flat or are falling. I know things are bizarre, but that's the way they are today. Here's another list. So here's Realtor.com, and they said, you know what, we're going to kind of sort of skip the next 18 months, and we're still going to look at markets that we think are going to be great for the longer term. And yes, they're affected by interest rates. Here's their list. So if you don't want to look at the short-term markets that are gaining, you know, rents, and you want to look at it at a 5-year, 10-year time frame, here's your list, right? They give the nod to Atlanta as the best housing markets. Among small markets, note my favorite market, Rogers, Arkansas, Walmart. Greenville, North Carolina, and Jacksonville, Florida. It's also very good for me to see San Antonio in this list. All right. I'm done with the lists. Final two slides. What are my picks? I love to stick my neck out so I can, you know, a year later figure out how right or wrong I was. And if this year's market does anywhere as well as my 2022 best market pick, which by the way was Tampa, Florida, I will be absolutely delighted. But first, best up-and-coming market in the U.S. Not the best market, but best up-and-coming, it's Jacksonville. And it beats a very strong up-and-comer, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Why Jacksonville? Very strong fundamentals. Excellent affordability scored. Affordability. High population growth. All of these support continued growth in Jacksonville. Home prices are out of whack, but not as out of whack as all the other markets. So you might, I mean, we're seeing some price declines in Jacksonville, but like more like 1%, 2%, not such a big deal. So you might want to look to buy in July, August, September, as we start to see lower mortgage rates. We are now seeing mortgage rates fall to the low sixes. I think they're going to be in the high fives in the second half of the year. That may be a good time for you to buy in Jacksonville. But if you want to know what the best market in the U.S. is, it is unquestionably Atlanta, Georgia. In the 7 or 8 years that I've been presenting this, it's been a finalist many times before, but never actually won. It beats Charlotte, North Carolina by a nose. Why? Affordability. Amongst all of the fast-growing superstar tech cities, Atlanta is the only one that's affordable. It has the highest housing affordability scores. It has extraordinary inward migration. It has a fast-growing tech industry and very, very consistent population growth, and it's going to continue to attract investors. If there are going to be any price declines, they're going to be modest. I think they're pretty much already done. Second half of the year may be a good time for you to purchase in Atlanta. Hopefully you don't buy in Atlanta or Jacksonville. Hopefully you join me with Mission 10,000, because I believe that what I'm doing is truly going to help America, and I believe that I'm able to do it profitably. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Bill.
All right, Neil, Mission 10,000 seems to get a lot of people pretty excited looking at the comments
awesome.
Here.
Awesome.
So here's just a little more, you know, follow up with Entrust. We have monthly webinars. Our next one on May 17th, we're going to be talking about self-storage. And again, we're going to have a guest speaker on there. We have a survey at the end, so please feel free to, we encourage you to answer that. We get great feedback from that, and we appreciate that. If you need any more information about self-directed IRAs specifically, you can visit our website, which is www.theentrustgroup.com. And then you can also follow us on social media. And in a minute, we're going to show you Neil's contact information as well, if you want to follow up with him. Again, Feel free to type in the questions. I've got one that I'm going to answer, and then we got a lot of Mission 10,000 comments, and then we're going to go from there.
Sounds good.
Please type in your questions. The first question that we have says, if the property in the IRA is paid off and has equity built, are you able to use an equity line for another property? The answer to that is yes. As long as the property is going to continue to be held in the name of the IRA and that the lender is willing to do that. I mean, that's the key, is that whatever lender you go to and you say, okay, you know, I want the IRA to borrow money. They have to be willing to lend to an IRA. But yes, you can take equity from, like, the IRA, the way I should phrase it is not you, but the IRA can take equity from one property, apply it to another property that's being held inside the IRA, and then, you know, that IRA can borrow the rest of the money. Again, that's, it all has to be done in the IRA. What you're not allowed to do is take equity from your IRA and use it to buy property in your personal name, right? That's a prohibited transaction.
Yeah, and by the way, anyone, if you have questions about other markets that I didn't discuss today that are close to your heart, feel free to ask me about those markets as well. Our team currently surveys 332 MSAs in the United States. The largest MSA is New York, so it's, you know, 17 million people. The smallest one is 58,000 people. And so we look all the way up and down the United States to try and figure out markets that are interesting. Some are truly astonishing. I can tell you, I am awed by Idaho Falls, Idaho, because there are so few markets in the United States that look anything like Idaho Falls. The numbers in Idaho Falls are so insanely, over the top in terms of growth, in terms of population, that we're still looking for another market like that in the U.S. Rogers, Arkansas comes close, but there's many other markets, especially larger ones, that you might be interested in. So feel free to toss questions. I'll try and answer them as best as I can.
Yeah, I don't want to make your head explode or nail anything, but I would really love to see some global. I don't know if you have access to information or if this is anything you've even considered, but boy, I'd really be interested in seeing like some other countries.
If I had to pick a city to invest in globally, right, I would pick Auckland in New Zealand. From what I can see, you know, the U.S., when I look at, you know, political polarization charts, you know, U.S. is one of the highest in the world, not quite the highest, but one of the highest in the world. Believe it or not, there are other countries more polarized than us. So statisticians like me look at, you know, what countries are the most balanced? What countries are the politicians not trying to kill each other or trying to sue each other? And the answer is that smart money is fleeing from almost every country in the world to a tiny island called New Zealand. People think New Zealand's next to Australia. It's actually a 3-hour flight from New Zealand to Sydney. But enormous, enormous amounts of capital is fleeing. Most of New Zealand is uninhabitable, but the city of Auckland is absolutely beautiful. It's on the North Island. From what I can tell, we may see home prices there be 10x higher over the next 10 or 15 years. So if you're interested in sort of a long-term play, check out Auckland. It's also a great place to visit. So it's not inexpensive, but compared to the U.S., I think you may consider it to be inexpensive if you live in a large city. So that's one city. The second one is Istanbul. So Turkey, for many reasons, very young population. It's the crossroads of Europe and Asia. It also geopolitically is well situated. As you know, that the Russians don't want to piss off Turkey because of the Bosphorus Strait. All of their ships go through it. Turkey is just in a very good place to be a massively growing economy in the next 10 or 15 years. So I'd pick Istanbul over Ankara or any of the other cities. It's the second tier cities. Istanbul is very inexpensive for one simple reason. Inflation there has been outrageous. And so that's sort of brought down, you know, prices at this point. Inflation in Turkey last year was 80%. We are whining about 6 to 9%. It was 80%. And so, you know, American dollars buy a lot in Istanbul. The third one is this. India is unquestionably the China of the next 50 years. China is not the China of the next 50 years simply because Chinese population is dropping. They've got a lot of old people. They've got actually more old people than younger people. So while China will continue to be a great place to invest in, I don't actually trust China because they change stuff. So I don't want to make any investments in China. But India is a democracy and slightly chaotic, but growing at an astonishing rate. So I would look at Bangalore because that is their tech center. I wouldn't go to Mumbai. It's expensive. I wouldn't go to Delhi. Those places are also polarized, but Bangalore or Bengaluru is an amazing city to invest in. And I think is set for a phenomenal run over the next 10 years. I would call Bengaluru the Austin or San Francisco Bay Area of India.
Very interesting. All right. So somebody, the next question just simply said prices in Atlanta with a question mark. So
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I can comment on that. So, I mean, when you look at prices in Atlanta compared to 3 years ago, the answer is they're expensive. They're probably up, you know, 30, 35, 40%, somewhere in that range. But you realize that many of the cities that compete with Atlanta in terms of attention from Fortune 500 companies, attention from people that are leaving their state to go to some other state, all of those went up 70%, 80%, right? 70% for Austin, 60% for Phoenix. So compared to them, the fact that Atlanta prices are up 35% is not such a big deal. Also, percentages sometimes are problematic because if you're starting from a low number and you go up 35% and another place like Austin starts from a high number and goes up 70%, well, those numbers are vastly different. So Atlanta was starting from a low base. Yes, prices are up. But when I compare Atlanta to 10 other places that are lucrative for technology startups for artificial intelligence, the prices in Atlanta are the most in line of any fast-growing city in America. Most in line. Not really in line.
Okay. Next question's for me. It says, my wife is a realtor. Can she collect commission on a buy-sell, or would she be considered a disqualified individual? She's a disqualified person. She can't collect commission on a buy or sell of a property in your IRA because she's your spouse. And honestly, I would give long consideration not even using her as the realtor on the transaction, even if she doesn't collect the commission, because that could be considered indirect prohibited transaction rather than a direct prohibited transaction.
Bill, can I do one more city tip outside the United States, something I'm very passionate about?
Sure.
All right. So when you look at the map of the United States, I'll just throw it up on the screen here, you'll notice that there's very few freeways that basically connect Mexico, which is going to end up becoming our largest partner because we hate the Chinese at this point in time. And we hate the, you know, guts of the Chinese. So we're trying to reshore. From what I can see, 90% of reshoring is actually happening back to the Mexico because everything's too expensive here. So this is the border. Can you see my screen? I hope
yep.
you can see me, right?
Yep.
So this is the border. And so as you can see, this is San Antonio right here, which is one of my key picks because of the same reason that I'm about to say. All the manufacturing is going here. So what's happening is that the cheaper manufacturing is going on this side of the border. And then the more expensive manufacturing, which needs lots of, you know, graduate degrees, are really happening in this area. So from Corpus Christi to San Antonio. So if you are looking to invest, one of the places that you might want to look into is Corpus Christi if you want to look inside the U.S. But if you want to look outside the United States, but very close, these two cities, Nuevo Laredo and Reynosa. Because the only way to get massive trillions of tons of upcoming manufacturing, which is mostly made in the city of Monterey, because that's really where the sites are. But all of this stuff has to move, and it moves to San Antonio. And from San Antonio, which has rail connections, it gets shipped out to everywhere in the United States. Nuevo Laredo is a massive beneficiary. I think home prices there might go up 5X or 10X. Monterey might go up more like 2X or 3X because it's sort of a recognized place, but also Reynosa. So the other way to get stuff in is go along 40 and then come up through McAllen. You still end up in San Antonio, but you're coming a different way. This is the gold rush. If only 5% of the manufacturing that occurs in China today ends up in Mexico over the next 10 years, this is about $50 trillion. Check out Nuevo Laredo, Reynosa, and Corpus Christi.
All right. Additional info from Neil. All right. So the next question is for you, Neil. Are there any opportunities to repurpose commercial real estate for multifamily? I'm thinking about the impending doom of commercial defaults.
So the short answer is We would love to do it. It's not going to happen. I have been to webinars specifically on this matter, so I'm just going to quote what Yardi Matrix said. They said only 3% of commercial real estate in the U.S., mostly office, is even eligible for a conversion to other types, those typically being condos or multifamily, which are in high demand. Why? Zoning, cost being too high, floor plates being very big. When you convert to multifamily, you need a lot of windows. If office floor plates are very large, then what do you do with the area in the center that has no windows? So floor plates are too large for the most part. Only 3% conversion. It's still a noble effort. We will still create thousands of apartments and condos. It's not going to solve any kind of problem. The office industry is set for a multi-decade debacle because of built-to-rent. You heard it from me. I'm sorry, not because of built-to-rent, because of work from home. It is set for a debacle. There's just no solution that I know of for 97% of offices in the U.S. that are now empty. Not every office is empty, but 97% of the empty offices cannot be converted.
Okay, so the next question Neil can't answer because we won't allow it. It's with Mission 10,000, what is your expected internal rate of return? Barry, looking at the screen there, you got Neil's email and phone number. Please reach out to him directly to answer that question. I'm sorry, Entrust doesn't allow, we don't allow presenters to talk about return on their investments for just compliance reasons.
Yep. I'll just say healthy. Okay. They're healthy.
Okay. Here's one. What are your thoughts about Louisville, Kentucky, Neil?
I like Louisville. So, you know, Kentucky is kind of this empty state where very few people live. And when I'm looking at places, I'm beginning to see a middle America making a comeback. So for a long time, I've been investing in superstar Southeast states, you know, Phoenix and Austin and all these other Texan places in Florida. But now when I'm looking at some of these markets that are considered, you know, traditionally slow growth and Rust Belt, I like Louisville. I like Omaha, Nebraska. I like Oklahoma City. These are making a comeback. I wouldn't have said this 18 months ago. But it's like, there's some opportunities in Louisville, Kentucky. I recently went to Louisville, Kentucky, and I, you know, mostly just went to places where they were making bourbon, because that's what they make in Louisville, Kentucky. But it was a very interesting place. I actually was like, this is interesting. I might add this to the list of cities that I am going to for Mission 10,000, because Mission 10,000 doesn't allow me to build in superstar cities. There's just no way my rents would work. So I have to actually go to places like Louisville, Kentucky. So far, yeah, I'm liking it. I went there in January.
Okay, next person asked about Detroit.
Challenging, and I'll say why. What's really happened is the state of Michigan has had either no growth or low growth for a very long time. Detroit has lost an enormous amount of population. It was the second largest metro in the United States in 1959. So it basically lost 60 or 70% of that population. So there's no belief by institutional equity in Detroit. So I think that there's money to be made in the suburbs of Detroit, in the suburbs of Detroit. But I think that you would do better if you went to Lansing or you went to Ann Arbor or some of these other places. And I keep hearing from people in Michigan, oh, these are expensive places. My answer is expensive compared to what? The rest of the United States is more expensive. So I think people in Michigan have this belief that they have to buy a really cheap property in Detroit. I think you would do a lot better by looking at Lansing, by looking at Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor in particular is very interesting. You know what's the best market in Michigan? The one that just lost in my, you know, here, I'm going to just throw this slide up on the screen. That one right here, Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is a marvelous market. Why would you want to invest in Detroit when Grand Rapids is just down the road?
Okay, Aurora, Colorado. Somebody asked about this. Specifically, they said, I see a lot of growth in Aurora, very close
to Denver. It's amazing growth, right? It's amazing growth. It's also expensive. Look, when you say Aurora, you're really talking Denver, because I don't think that you can really subtract Aurora from Denver. This is a, you know, upscale suburb of Denver. No, I think Colorado has had incredible price growth and it needs to take a breather. I think that breather is going to be the next 3 to 5 years. So I think Colorado prices might just go up with inflation and you are looking to beat inflation. It's been a wonderful rise in Aurora prices. I don't think it's going to replicate that in the next 5 years simply because they're really expensive and have severe affordability problems.
Um, Somebody just wrote Los Angeles, California. I'm not sure. Like, I'm guessing they're asking about what your opinion is of Los Angeles.
LA's had a great run. I think it's a great city. I think that you could probably find 100 markets in the United States that are going to do better. Keep in mind that I just showed you the list of the cities that have lost the most amount. And you notice that Los Angeles was, well, right here, minus 7.6%. Did you also notice that half this list is California? Be careful. All the Californians seem to love California. They don't really listen to data. But it's in front of you. All the years that I've been telling you California is going to lose significant, you know, home prices. Well, now I can just tell you, look at the chart. Why do you have to stick with California? It's an amazing world out there. You live in America, not in California.
Hey, Neil, as someone who grew up in Western Pennsylvania, a bit of a pet peeve for us, Pittsburgh has an H at the end. Pittsburgh, California.
Yes. You are correct.
California does not have an H at the end. Okay.
Yes.
That's just my Western Pennsylvania thing. Okay.
Yes.
Any recommendations for the metropolitan New York area or even further north in New York?
Not a lot. I would say Buffalo. Buffalo is the cheapest big market in New York and is very interesting at this point. Rents are rising. A lot of people are leaving New York simply because of affordability issues. New York as a metro is very problematic. Do you know the population loss to Florida? It's stunning right now. I mean, this is just not enough news. I mean, the amount of people that San Francisco is losing to other markets and the amount of people that New York is losing to Florida, this should be headline news every single day, and it's not theirs. This is risky. I mean, Connecticut is emptying out. I think before long, there'll be like 7 people living in Connecticut, and one of them is going to be called Michael Bolton. These places are hollowing out. You have to be careful.
Where does the Orlando, Florida market stand in comparison to the other cities you mentioned?
It does well. I think Orlando is doing really well. One of the big reasons it's doing well is the way that Category 5 hurricanes work is they tend to hit the city on the coast, and then when the hurricane comes over land, it slows down. So, Orlando's never been hit by a Category 5. Everything else has. I mean, you know, Tampa basically took almost a direct hit recently from Ian. So a lot of business is moving inland. They don't want to leave Florida. They think Florida is the most awesome place in the world. They're like, yeah, but we don't want to take a direct hit from a Category 5. Well, Orlando has a track record of never being hit because, you know, hurricanes slow. So it's benefiting from these long-term, you know, benefits where people are, you know, moving their factories from other places in Florida to Orlando. So I think it's a great market. Right now it's fairly expensive. It's losing rents a little bit. It's losing, you know, home prices just a tad bit. But if you're looking for the 5-year, 10-year time frame, I really don't think you can go wrong with Orlando. If you still find it to be too expensive, Lakeland, Florida, which is drivable from Orlando, is a market that you should look into.
Do you have any insight for land investments? Their values mirror the rise in the housing market.
Land is going to be in free fall in the next 3 months. Be very careful. Land is illiquid when you cannot do new construction in most parts of the United States. Today, proformas don't work for new construction in most parts of the United States. Have land prices fallen? Not really. It takes a while before stubborn sellers figure out that they have an illiquid asset. Are land prices going to go up in the next 12 months? Hell no. Are they going to go down? Hell yes. How much? I don't know.
This person asked if you're going to have a detailed webinar regarding the Mission 10,000.
Absolutely. Yes. But as I mentioned, that webinar is going to get into details that won't be on the Entrust platform. Yes.
Yeah, you'll do your own thing. What's your view on work from home or digital nomad trend on fractional property ownership, given the high interest rate negatively impacting home ownership?
So I think you're combining two things that are not directly combinable. They're related concepts. Fractional ownership is a concept that's somewhat related to work from home, but you're trying to combine two things together. I haven't seen any evidence that you can really smoosh them together in that way. It's clear that work from home is here to stay. The massive majority of companies have accepted that people will either go to work 3 days a week or in some cases 4 days a week. But nobody's really forcing people to come back 5 days a week because they're then losing those employees. Those people just go to other companies. And so corporate America has lost this battle at this point in time because they need talent. I mean, unemployment's at 3.4%. So they have very little power at this point. And that is changing real estate. That's changing real estate because places like Idaho Falls are gaining engineers who are basically living in Idaho Falls for $400,000 homes or, you know, $1,600 a month townhomes and are making $150,000 to $200,000. So what's happening, though, is even the people that are working from home 2 days a week are looking for a different kind of home. They need an office. So demand for real estate, especially real estate with offices, is growing. Now, how does that relate to fractional? Not so much because of lack of legislation. I mean, they're truly fractional, you know, real estate investing is still a fad. It's a concept. People are doing hundreds of, you know, homes that are being fractionalized in some way. We need to do millions of homes before I look at this and say, okay, this is a big deal.
Okay, next one sort of is along those lines. Real estate trends affected by mass migration at northern and southern borders.
No, not at all. One of the key things is this. I want to be as apolitical about what I'm about to say. While there was significant increase in mass migration over the last year and a half, please note that overall migration into the United States has been going down for the last 20 years. This data is easy. Go ask ChatGPT. It'll give you a straightforward answer. There is no mass migration into the United States that I'm aware of. Those are relative words. Overall migration into the United States for both legal and illegal folks is down. Yes, we saw a spike last year. That spike seems to have settled. Honest answer is this. Republicans have changed. In the past, they wanted immigration. They wanted people making burgers at Burger King's and tacos at Taco Bell. The truth is they were right all along. We need that manpower, and it isn't coming in at this point. Why do you think that labor prices are going up through the roof? In the short run, it's good news for Americans. In the long run, it simply means we live with higher inflation. I see no evidence that there is enough migration from either our northern border, very little, or our southern border, very little compared to the past, for us to be worried about that.
Yeah, we've had issues, at least that occurred, I'm not sure it's still happening, of fruit basically dying on the vine because they didn't have enough people to.
That is a real problem right now. We have an agricultural disaster happening because farmers in the United States cannot hire people to pick fruit. That is a problem, and you will see the impact of that in the coming in food prices the next 6 months. It's going to be very obvious that we're running out of labor. We're severely short of labor. And by the way, Americans don't want to pick fruit from the vine. They don't even want to work in factories anymore.
Next question just asked if you have thoughts about Vietnam.
Vietnam is the second or third largest beneficiary of our fight with China. So this thing with China is likely to get worse. They will do something bad. We will do something worse. Then they will do something even worse. So it gets worse and worse and worse. Who are the beneficiaries, right? Well, it's Vietnam, Mexico, India, and the Philippines. Those are the four countries that are going to see money move from China. And by the way, who are the people doing it? The most counterintuitive answer is the Chinese. Do you know who's opening factories in Vietnam? Chinese people who are very rich, who understand that they need a second base. Who's opening factories in the Philippines? Almost all of them are Chinese. The Chinese understand that they need a second base. The cheapest and youngest population for the moment, it's going to be India in the future, but for the moment, it's Vietnam. Vietnam has an incredible future, and I think Phnom Penh is an incredible city to invest in.
So this person come back to Atlanta again, just says, what are the price ranges in Atlanta, like 400K? That was their specific question.
That, I think the answer, the best way to understand that answer, because there's no clear answer to that, is to type the exact words, Zillow Home Values Atlanta. And you'll get a very detailed page that is not accessible from the Zillow homepage. You cannot get there from the Zillow homepage. Zillow Home Values Atlanta. You'll get a huge amount of information, 2-bed, 3-bed, 4-bed, prices going up for all, rents, all of that stuff is on that page. I use it all the time. And by the way, it works for every city in America. Just Zillow, home, values, city name.
I really opened a can of worms by asking you international, Neil. Next question says, with regards to global investment, any other European countries, the smaller, newer entries into the EU, maybe?
Not really. I mean, I would say Croatia. I mean, and it's not technically part of the EU. I think most European Union countries are suffering. We basically have one incredibly strong economy, Germany, and a bunch of deadbeats. I won't name them, but I think you know, sort of know what it is. The Eurozone is a failed experiment. I am not going to direct investor monies into a failed experiment that's struggling. They've already had a Brexit, which was a massive cluster F. And now they're going to basically, now there's multiple countries thinking of leaving because, I mean, Germany should be leaving. Why are the Germans subsidizing all these other deadbeat countries? Why would you want to invest real estate in the middle of this failed experiment? I think all of the good countries are really the Eastern European countries. The problem is they're getting massive number of refugees from the Ukraine, and that's going to create significant structural problems. If you had to pick one, I would say Zagreb, which is the capital of Croatia.
Here's an interesting question. Can you buy international real estate using a 1031 exchange? Can you 1031 into an exchange into an international property? Do you know the answer to that, Neil?
You can't get any 1031 benefits. The property has to be here in the U.S. So, okay. I mean, technically you could, but you'd end up paying taxes.
I could have referred you to a 1031 exchange company, Ed. But since Neil knew the answer to that, I didn't know the answer.
Somebody asked me before, so I asked a 1031 company.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, cool. All right. Here's one for me. Is a life partner, not a married spouse, of a direct descendant considered a disqualified person? That's a good question. And I guess you potentially could get into what are like common law married, like what's considered common law married in the state as far as whether that would be considered a disqualified person. Alex, I'm not sure I know the answer to that. My inclination is to say no, that the specific rules say a spouse of a disqualified person, right? Or a spouse of your lineal descendant. So my instinct is to say no, that they would not then be considered a disqualified person. But I also am not entirely sure because, like I said, you could get into what are rules around being common law married. So I'm going to ask you, to email me, which hopefully, like, you'll get this, link for this presentation. Maybe go to the end or just bneville@theentrustgroup.com. Email me that question and then I can, I'll reach out to somebody internally who I'm confident would know the answer to that for sure. But again, my instinct is to say no, they would not be a disqualified person because they're not married. What if the property is under an LLC? I thought the LLC pays title and real estate fees. So you're expanding on a question you asked earlier. So are you saying, I'm guessing, Victor, our questions get deleted, so I can't go back and look, but you're probably the person who asked about the borrowing, you know, using collateral for one property to buy a second property. If the property is held under the LLC, then as long as that second property is also held under that LLC, you can use that to, for collateral for, that second property. I'm sorry. I kind of got lost in my thoughts. Your question disappeared, but if that didn't answer your question, again, reach out to me directly because you just expanded on a previous question. I don't remember what your previous question was. That asked about Louisville made a comment that they like Louisville. What do you think about the suburbs of Chicago? As someone who used to live in Chicago, the suburbs is a pretty broad area because you have south and west, and north is dramatically different than the southern suburbs. But I'm going to let Neil go ahead and answer that the way he wants.
Yeah. So I mean, the suburbs really go all the way to Indiana. There's people that live in Indiana that drive into Chicago to work. So, you know, what I would say is the south side of Chicago, which is a specific area that you should look into, is considered the least investor grade product in the United States. And I won't get into why. I'm sure you can Google it. In general, I am very bearish on Chicago. I love the city. It is an absolutely beautiful and amazing city. But the challenge is that the state of Illinois has to declare bankruptcy at some point. And the challenges are their bankruptcy laws are so screwed that even when they're ready to declare bankruptcy, it may get challenged by the courts. In other words, here's my belief. The state of Illinois and Cook County, which holds Chicago, by the way, all of Chicago is inside Cook County, are likely to be part of the biggest financial mess that we are going to see in American history over the next 5 years. You remember how Orange County went through bankruptcy? This is going to be 10 times worse. This is actually common knowledge in that area. People know this because there is actually no way for Cook County to get out of its financial trouble. And as you can imagine, COVID is making it the interest rates are making it much worse because they had bonds that they were paying 2 or 3%. Now when they refinance those bonds, they are like 8, 9, 10%, right? So it's completely crazy, completely out of control. I thought that they might get through the next 3 years, but now with the interest rates being where they are, there's a 100% chance of a meltdown. And that meltdown is going to be so bad. Keep in mind, Chicago is a $500 billion economy. We're not talking about one city. We're talking about a part of America. That is going to be so bad that it will affect Minneapolis. It will affect Indiana. It will affect Michigan. Because Chicago is really the center of that area of the United States. Everything flows through Chicago. And when it comes to an abrupt stop at the point where they can't finance their debt anymore, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, they're going to make a massive mess. And by the way, it will lead to a U.S. recession because $500 billion is a lot. This is an Orange County. We're talking about 7.5 million people and a state that basically can't pay its bills. So I know this sounds very dire, but please don't think that I'm telling you something that's unusual. Just Google it. Chicago bankruptcy, Cook County bankruptcy. You know, what happens to muni bonds? All of this is documented. Nobody knows when it's going to happen, but the interest rate hike made it impossible for them to push the can down the road.
Okay. All right, Neil, we still have a lot of questions, so you might want to see if you can shorten your answers a little bit.
Yep. It's shorter.
This person asked about Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. It said Indiana and then said Indianapolis or Buffalo area. I don't think there's a Buffalo, Indiana, so I'm guessing two different.
I'd pick Indy over Buffalo any day. I think Indy has a lot of benefits from the return of industrialization to the United States. It's in the right place. It's a good market. It's inexpensive. It often shows up in our lists and was last year's up and coming city for us. So Indy, good. Indy, good.
Cincinnati.
Better than Cleveland. Worse than Columbus. There are three large cities in Ohio. Columbus is easily the leader. It's the only one that has population growth. Cincinnati, no population growth, but no population gain. No population loss. Cleveland loses population. So it's in the middle.
Houston, Texas.
Houston is the least loved city in Texas and should be loved a lot more. There's a lot of great things that happen in Houston. It's one of the fastest growing cities in the U.S., Austin gets all the love from the tech people. Dallas gets all the love from everybody else. I think Houston should be loved more.
Orlando, Florida.
I already answered Orlando.
Yeah, you did. What is your opinion of Minneapolis with all the political drama that is happening there?
Honestly, it's not a great real estate market. Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Twin City area, is actually a really terrific real estate market if you had gotten in 5 or 6 years ago. At this point, it doesn't make sense. And you do know that Minneapolis just banned single-family zoning, right? I hope you understand how dangerous that is to real estate. Anyone can take a single-family home and build 4 units. That's a lot of supply. Would you really want to get into that?
Any hurricane weather? Wait a second, I lost my space. Okay, here we go. Any hurricane/weather concerns that raise costs/insurance, et cetera, with investments in Jacksonville. So any weather issues with Jacksonville you're concerned about, basically?
No. Keep in mind the way hurricanes work. Jacksonville is the least likely city other than Orlando to get hit. Just think about the way hurricanes work and the way that they curve. So we haven't seen a lot of hurricanes hit Jacksonville. So, you know, its insurance costs are high and you're going to have to deal with that. But I'm sure you'll put that into your pro forma. But I would be a lot less concerned about Jacksonville than I would be about Miami or Tampa or Sarasota.
Okay, next question is specific, Neil. I'm going to suggest Victor reach out to you directly. It seems like he wants to maybe do some business with you on some property that they own. So I'm going to, rather than have that be, you know, a question that you answer, just Victor, Neil, you guys talk.
Yeah. Too specific. Okay.
Okay, this is just input, so I'm going to skip that. Pittsburgh, again, without an H?
Well, I'm assuming you're talking about the big Pittsburgh, so that's Pennsylvania. You know, I love Pittsburgh, but I can't really recommend it because the state of Pittsburgh just cannot seem to get out of its funk. And I'm very annoyed because they have some great advantages, amazing universities. Can't recommend it. The math doesn't support that.
Okay. What about, I'm going to butcher the name. I don't know how to say it.
Coeur d'Alene? So Coeur d'Alene is in Idaho. So Coeur d'Alene is becoming a lifestyles of the rich area. So as we know, we think about Aspen as being a lifestyles of the rich area in Colorado. We think about Park City being the lifestyles of the rich area in Utah. Well, Coeur d'Alene is becoming that, not just for Idaho, but most people actually that are rich that go to Coeur d'Alene are from Washington State, because Coeur d'Alene is 20 minutes away from the Washington State border. So they come in from Seattle. And so it's becoming a very up-and-coming, trendy area. So if prices drop there, and they haven't dropped much yet, like 6 or 7%, prices drop, that might be an interesting area. I think Coeur d'Alene is a great Airbnb market, if you understand short-term rentals, especially close to the lakes. So it's a very, very interesting market. It has a very checkered history. It used to be the capital of the Ku Klux Klan, but it's changed a great deal. I think it's an amazing market. You just want to wait for prices to drop.
All right, here's a question, Neil, that goes in a completely different direction. Not entirely sure I don't have any thoughts or opinion on this, but it says, what percentage of millennial net worth do you think will eventually be in blockchain and or tokenized assets, so digital currencies? What other demographic trends do you see with that demographic, with millennials, apparently?
It'll be smaller than most people think. Firstly, tokenization doesn't seem to be going anywhere because the SEC is clearly extremely opposed to tokenization. So they're blocking tokenization from becoming a grander thing. Blockchain, the challenges with the blockchain are that when you know, they lose money, you lose massive amounts of money. Like, you know, recently we've had FTX and a bunch of other disasters. So I think the millennials, like everyone else, as they grow up and get older, will realize the amount of risk they take when they invest into blockchains. I'm not talking about companies investing in blockchains. Your question is specific to the millennials, which are individuals. I think that they're going to learn. So I think it's going to be less than you might think.
Okay, so this next one, I can't tell if it's a statement or a question because they put a question mark at the end, but I'm going to read it anyway. It says, from a construction slash builder perspective, would agree, and maybe they meant to say, would you agree, but said, would agree that this is an excellent opportunity to provide homes slash buildings at one-third less the price and built in half the time when compared to traditional builders. Again, they phrased it as a question, but I'm not sure that's a question as so much as a comment.
My email address was up on the screen. We should talk, because the truth is I don't understand your question. I've never heard of anyone building anything at one-third of the price of everybody else. So if you can magically do that, please come talk with me.
Well, one-third less the price, so probably, I guess they meant two-thirds the price. But
yeah, one-third less. Yeah, even one-third less, I'd love to talk to you. So please, it's on the screen.
Somebody asked again about Indianapolis. You covered that. What are your thoughts on investing in a Costa Rica condo?
Well, conflicted, right? So I've been to Costa Rica. I've been to those condo developments. You know, I've poured them. It's challenging. It's very difficult to quantify the risk, okay, because there are so many factors that we are just not used to in the U.S. You know, the U.S. is fee simple property. It's very straightforward. Costa Rica has been very stable for a while, but, you know, go back and read its history for the last 50 years. The world was very stable in the last 20 years. The next 20 years are not going to be that stable because we're running out of everything. And in my mind, you don't want to be investing in states like Costa Rica simply because they've had a very checkered history.
Is Houston still a good market for rentals?
Probably. I would say it's a good 5 to 10 year market. There's a lot of appreciation that you can get in the long run. For rentals, I'm not so sure. I mean, I think the smaller markets are doing better right now. I gave you a list of small markets that are seeing rent growth. You know, that the ones that I basically said normally don't show up in my list. Houston's a superstar market. I think it's low cash flow.
This person asked about recommending an estate planning person. I think they were asking me more than you, Neil, group to help with integrating a self-directed IRA in combination with a real estate LLC. I mean, you, from a standpoint, I don't have anybody to recommend to you, but I can tell you that you can name a trust as a beneficiary of your IRA. So when you talk about integrating a self-directed IRA, what you would do is you would set up your trust, and then you would, change the beneficiary of your IRA to the trust. That's your way of integrating it. Neil, do you know an estate planning person that you? I'm not saying say the person's name. I'm saying, do you even have anybody that they can maybe reach out to? Because I don't know.
No, I'll pass.
Okay. Somebody asked about Little Rock, Arkansas.
Love it. I think Little Rock is an unappreciated little gem. And so I think if you live there or you're close to that area, you should definitely take a look at that. I would still put it second to Rogers. Rogers is pretty amazing.
Okay. This person asked, it just says further details on Lakeland, Florida, I guess, if you want to expand on.
I'll simply say this. I'm obsessed with the idea of compression cities. A compression city is located a drivable distance from two large metros on either side of it. Those cities tend to have massive growth. Lakeland, a husband could drive to Disney for work in Orlando. A wife could drive to Tampa. It's a compression city, and there's very few compression cities in the U.S. with both sides drivable. If you wanted another compression city, it is New Braunfels, which is between Austin and San Antonio. Compression cities always grow much faster than the cities on either side of them. So my belief is Lakeland will continue to grow faster than either Tampa or Orlando.
Okay. Sorry, I lost my place here. Any viable market in the Pacific Northwest to take long-term advantage of the negative national news?
Only one. Tri-Cities area, Kennewick, Washington, is an amazing market. But keep in mind, it's 3 hours drive time from Olympia and 4 hours drive time from Seattle. So plenty of driving involved. But check out Kennewick, Washington. It's called Tri-Cities.
This one is asking, continuing on Jacksonville and land price, said you said land prices are about to fall precipitously. Given Jacksonville is on the rise, in quotes, do you see the same risk for land values in Jacksonville?
To a lower extent, please note that I had a slide that specifically said that Florida has avoided a drop in real estate prices. So as the only hot state that has avoided home price drops, I would have to say that, land prices in Florida are probably also going to drop less than other places. So I see less of a risk. I myself continue to look for land in the Jacksonville area. I think, we're not going to, I don't know how to time the bottom of the market. I just think that, there's going to be some land discounting. You should just take it if you're building. It's not going to be a huge drop in Florida. I don't think so. Home prices are going up.
Okay, you've been invited to New Braunfels, Texas, to try some bourbon there, Neil, just FYI.
Wow. Please make sure that you email me. You've got it on the screen.
Yeah, not me. Thoughts on investing in San Diego, California condos? they specified condos.
I do not understand the condo market in San Diego.
And again, asking about condos, but this time in the Philippines. They heard the real estate industry there has been growing.
Yes, but be aware, they've got the same sort of fee simple issues that Costa Rica has. They changed their laws, so that's a risk that you would take. But if I had to pick one between the Philippines and Costa Rica, I would definitely pick Philippines, but I wouldn't pick Manila. I would pick Cebu City. So C-E-B-U, Cebu City has lots and lots and lots of condos available. You can just Google it. They do have English websites. As you might not know this, but I have 18 employees that live in the Philippines. They're full-time employees of ours. And they all love real estate in Cebu City, but not so much in Manila.
Colorado Springs, Colorado, someone's asking about.
Was a lovely market that is now expensive. So, you know, it's problematic. I mean, there's so many of these amazing markets, you know, like Aurora or Colorado Springs or, you know, so many others. Just the prices are not making sense. I want to buy in Colorado, and it's just mathematics keeps me from buying. Colorado City has the same problem as some of the other places. Cheyenne Mountain might be a little better.
Okay, next to the last question. Cocoa Beach, Florida for condo investing. Again, they specified condos.
I do not understand the condo market in Cocoa Beach, Florida.
Okay. Okay, two more questions again. Now, This is a good question. When Neil speaks of good or amazing markets, just to be clear, is he referring to them as rental markets? I'm thinking you're referring to them as just real estate growth, right? But go ahead and answer.
I'm biased towards rental growth, but I also look at, you know, there's clearly a lot of people that have asked me questions about new construction on this. So I look at both, but rentals tend to be my primary bias. So I think the answer is yes, most of the time.
Portland, Maine.
Portland, a wonderful city, quite expensive. It's just math that isn't working. I think Portland has a very bright future, but you'd be waiting a long time for cash flow, so keep that in mind. Also, they seem to be getting a little more aggressive on rent control, so you may want to keep your eye on the rent control. Oregon's rent control has generally been gentle
Portland,
and
Maine.
Fair.
Sorry, Neil. Portland, Maine.
Portland, Maine. Oh, Maine. Don't know enough about Portland, Maine. I was talking about Portland, Oregon. Don't know enough.
Okay. That is the last question. And we had a surprising number of attendees that stayed right till the very bitter end. We usually have a lot of people in the questions
amazing.
Section. So
I think we set a record for maximum number of questions.
Yeah, that was up there.
Yeah.
All right,
so,
Neil,
always
a pleasure. Thanks again, everybody who attended. You guys can see our contact information. If you, you know, want to talk about self-directed IRAs, need any questions answered, contact me. If you want to know anything about real estate, contact Neil.
The Mission 10,000 people, if we can have those sent to me because you have the chat, you know, I would love to follow up with those people.
Yeah, we'll send you that.
Yeah, awesome. Sure. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, Neil. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Bye.